That's a big applause, you guys. Harrison, how many friends did you bring and pay to be here for you?
About two or three.
Okay, cool. Cool.
They're the loud ones.
You got the loud ones.
They'll be the loud
they
ones.
They will be the loud ones.
That's good. That's all right. Those stories we got to hear.
So it's just drinking buddies. Okay. Do you want to kick off with that? Or
no,
good?
I do not.
He's good. You guys happy? You're good? Ready to start?
Ecstatic. Let's go. Let's rock.
Let's rock.
Tell some stories.
I want to hear your guys' stories, to be honest, about Rebel, but we'll get to that later, I guess.
Okay, fine.
The night I was
I left
Rebel,
early. I left early.
I left late.
I'm not allowed to go there.
Let's start off because we've covered kind of what it means in the art culture and what it means for Toronto culture and basketball culture. When we look back at this Toronto championship, what do you think that legacy will look like for this team?
Oh, I think there's a whole different wave of young kids who's going to get involved in basketball now. I think it started with Stoudemire in 95. It went through Vince in 1999 and 2001. And now that this wave is going to come, we want to be little Kawhis and little Kyles and little Dannys and little guys like that. I think it's a third wave of the sport in the country.
And the first two waves really haven't gone away. They've just gotten older. They're still there.
I'm no older.
Well, that's right. That's right. The kids get older. We don't.
I had dark hair and weighed 150 first year of the Raptors.
I had hair. I think to your point, Doug, that there is a whole new generation. And people will look back at this, and Kawhi's run through this will just, the legendary stature of it will continue to grow. I mean, especially, it started in game four against Philadelphia. And then there was the game seven, and everybody will talk about, you know, load management. I heard the thing today where the league is considering changes in, what is it, 21-22 or 2021? They're considering changes of schedule. I got my idea. Play everybody twice. Start the playoffs after 58 games. 130, 229, 3-7-game series. Like, if you get 1 7-game series, so you're an owner, all right, so you only get, like, 62 games, but
this whole thing, this multi-billion-dollar Turner deal that probably isn't going to go for 58-game season.
True.
There's a lot of Thursday nights they got to put stuff on television.
You guys mentioned how important this run is for the Raptors in the country. If you think about it, too, now we're starting to hear more about the potential of a WNBA team coming into the country.
And to that point, Dougie knows the same guy I do. His name's Norm Friedman. Norm used to bring games to Canada, preseason games. Like, I saw Dennis Rodman walking around Hamilton. Like, who is that guy, right? And, you know, the Detroit Pistons.
He fit right in with Hamilton, though.
Yeah, he did. He stood out. Detroit Pistons are playing, like, Leo Routon's making a comeback with the New Jersey Nets on a Thursday night when they had the earthquake at the World Series. And Norm used to do those things, and he wanted, like, 8-10 years ago to get a WNBA team. And nobody cared. So it's great. To that point, it's great.
I think people, and you're going to be hard-pressed to find a guy more supportive of the WNBA than I am. But I'm not entirely sure it works yet because I think the WNBA has to get its act in order first. Mm. It's not economically viable until they get a new CBA. They find out how these women don't have to go play in Australia or Russia or Turkey or Spain so they can actually be athletes in North America. When they do that, it'll be great here in a 7,500 9,000 seat stadium, no question about it at all. But I do think that's a fall of 2021 deal.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. As somebody who's grew up watching the game at different stops across the United States, to see it here and to see how it could potentially grow is exciting. And because you know, there's young men, there's also young women who are practicing a Danny Green 3-pointer. They're practicing a up and under for Marcus Gasol. So that's
good market right there, pal.
Yeah, come on now, you know what I'm doing. but also, too, and you guys know about this, you've seen the game of basketball transform to this three-pointers and ridiculous shots type of league. There are now kids in their basement, in their backyard, and they're imitating Kawhi Leonard saying, I want to lock you up. I want to take the ball from you. And so we're seeing basketball potentially get is going to be, hopefully, becomes more pure, where players value that side of the ball on top of it being expanded to potentially Halifax, Vancouver, Montreal, and all over the country.
I think one of the greatest things about basketball in this country and this city specifically is that and we've written about this and said it forever, it reflects what we are.
Yes.
You look around, you see people of all cultures, all ages. Look at this room. You got women and men and Europeans, Asians, South Americans. It's a global phenomenon, and I think the Raptors cottoned on to that very early, and it became a thing. They are reflective of the city they represent, and I don't think that should get lost. That's a big part of their appeal to the masses in Toronto.
And to your point, Doug, every general manager has tried to take advantage of that. Going back to Isaiah, who is Vincenzo Esposito?
Well,
right?
We shouldn't speak his name, but that's
sorry,
okay.
Sorry.
More like, who is Jean Tabac?
Jean Tabac, right.
And, Pops Mensa Bonsu.
All I know is traveling across the border in that first year with Jean Tabac, we always got held up. And at one point I said to him, Carlos Rogers used to call him Tobacco. Remember that, Carlos? He said Tobacco.
I'm trying to block Carlos out of my mind too.
Okay, sorry, man. I'm having a bad flashback here. You say Tobacco. Why we always got to wait for you? He said, "Look at picture. I look like KGB." Like his passport picture. His passport picture was like, "Yeah, dude, you need a shave in that." And you know, like, what's that symbol on the front? What country is that? You know, like they ain't letting you in.
He might very well have been KGB. Just saying, I love Zion like a brother, but you never know with those guys. But like, yeah, but we saw it with Colangelo when he brought over Garbo and Anthony Parker who played in Israel and Rob Babcock with Jose Calderon.
Yeah.
And going back to, you go back to Vincenzo and you go back to all these, you know, Rasha was
but
like
you were in Barcelona, right?
Yes, I was.
Doug and I were both in Barcelona when we got a call saying, by the way, the NBA is tired of seeing Oscar Schmidt score 47 points against kids and winning and celebrating in Indianapolis. No more Mr. Nice Guy. They are going flea hunting with a fleet of tanks. They are sending Barkley, Ewing, Jordan. I looked at the team and I went, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. The last guy I got to...
And Christian Laettner.
Was Christian... No Hall of Fame. If they would have put Shaq on that team...
Duke Hall of Fame.
You're right, yeah. And we watched people, world-class athletes in other disciplines, jump over barriers to run and get close to Magic and Jordan and Bird. And it's like, I turned to Quinn Buckner. I said, can you believe this? He goes, this is bigger than the Olympics.
The very first game the Dream Team ever played was in Portland, the Tournament of the Americas, 1992, United States against Cuba. And the Cuban players, during the playing of the game, were on the bench taking pictures of their teammates getting beaten up by the Americans.
I've never seen
anything like it in my life.
You could see the guy. Hey, man, here's my camera. When I get close to Magic over there and I'm in a stance...
Can you guys imagine if Instagram was around back then, how much more it would have been?
It was crazy.
But there would have been some stories.
To the point, it is global. And it is on the rise. And it's... I mean, when I was in schools... Every kid wanted to be on the 7th grade, 8th grade basketball team to the point where I knew who the best 6-7 kids were, but we had a team with 35 kids. And we didn't practice. We ran drills every day, and it was like a clinic. And when we got to a game, all right, you 15 get shirts. You 8 are going to play. We're going to win. We'll have practice tomorrow because you just never know. Look at an Anthony Davis, how much he grew from a point guard. Now he's a big man, still has the skills. You just can't tell with kids. And I just love the fact that they all want to be involved right now.
You know, the interesting thing as we talk about what this might mean for the city and the Raptors, you guys know this. There's a bunch of quality players from the city of Toronto that are in the NBA who are potentially now looking at the Raptors as a team they want to come back to since now that they've won a championship. Now, I'm not this... Jamal Murray's free agency is a long, long,
go ahead,
long,
tampering, long man. Way. Go ahead, brother. Tampering. Go ahead.
Long ways away.
Are we June 30th yet? Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
But if you're Jamal Murray, you're saying to yourself, you know, if I happen to become a free agent at some point, if he doesn't accept the contract extension that should be coming towards him, hey, my city won a championship without me. I want to come back and put on for where I came from. So Oh, okay. Sorry. Thank you for the clarification.
It's the same thing. PTA. It's around here.
It's like New York, L.A. Nothing in between, right? Toronto, yeah. Detroit. Nothing in between.
If Blake Murphy's still here and you're slagging the 705, the 519, wherever the hell Kitchener is, 519, he'll be after you because he's like, he's Jamal Murray's boy, Kitchener stuff.
I'll get some clarifications from you later.
All right, but Harrison, you talk about what it kind of means for the Canadian players, but it also means so much for the players that are on the Raptors as well, especially, I'm going to say, Danny Green, who's won a championship somewhere else. And I know you can speak to this. I mean, Paul, you were at the parade. Even seeing that many people come to the parade, like, how different are those championships and how much would it mean, you know, for the players who have done it before or the players who this is their first time? Like, how... I don't even know how, like, I'm flabbergasted to think of the word on how that parade showed out for Canada.
Well, Danny was wildly impressed because San Antonio is like 80,000 people.
Yeah, I've been in San Antonio when they won titles. It was pretty much not like that.
I was on the float with Patrick McCaw's dad, and I said to him, and, you know, he's experienced a couple of those in Golden State. I said, so, you know, like, what do you think? And he was like, oh, they turned out, but not like this. And he said that, like, you couldn't match the numbers. And this was when I was on that bus before we got to the Princess Gates. Like, the parade hadn't started yet. Yeah.
I was missing my third GO train and headed to my bar at that point. But I think, Kelsey, what you're bringing up, Masai brought this up yesterday in this wonderful hour-long chat he did with us, is that this is something that could never be taken away from any of them.
Never.
You know, whatever your career ends up as, you can say, I was an NBA champion. Malcolm Miller, Chris Boucher. You have no idea whether they'll be in a league next year,
sure.
Let alone.
Yep.
But they're NBA champions, and that means a hell of a lot.
McCaw's a three-peat.
Well, and it goes back. I mean, I was talking, my brother said, oh, I've seen that in Miami. He said, Antoine Walker, NBA champion. Like to Doug's point, you can't take that away. Like, that never goes away. It's like having your degree, no matter what stupid stuff you do or how dumb, you can always turn and say, bachelor of
they
whatever,
always say,
right?
C's get degrees, right?
So, right.
And even for the guys who have won before, maybe they'll win again. Danny won a national title in North Carolina. It was special. He won titles in San Antonio. That was special to him. But to the programs or the organizations that he was with, I was like, oh, we do this kind of all the time.
Yeah.
But for him to, for this team to win it for the Raptors, the first time ever, you know, to have a team from another country, from Canada, playing in the NBA, winning a title, that is unique history that cannot be replicated.
And I heard earlier in one of your earlier panels, we're talking to somebody about the gear that y'all bought. Everybody bought like a billion shirts, right? Like a plaid and plaid. Wait till they get their jerseys next year with the little gold patch behind the neck with the champions on it.
Yeah.
I want a cut of that, and I want a cut of Fun Guy shirts, by the way, while we're there.
Boardman gets paid, boardman gets rings.
Just the Fun Guy stuff.
I want to see how much the Raptors made financially off this run, because I want everybody to be fairly compensated.
All right, let me say this.
Masai joked yesterday that you're going to give me a ring. I said I'd rather have a share.
Yes. And I'll tell you this. I think it was 3 years ago, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, I'm told, I didn't research it, so I'm passing on hearsay.
We're off the record right now. It's okay.
Oh, really?
Us and like all these people in this room and nobody watching on the outside. I heard that they made more money on the dollar than the government. Government made 14 cents on the dollar. Maple Leaf Sport made 16 cents on the dollar. So imagine what it is now.
As well they should. We get more from Maple Leaf Sports than we get from the government.
Look, to the point you guys are talking about, a lot of people, and Doug was here, a lot of people said, it'll never go up here. And the first wave of players, they came up here, they knew they weren't in the U.S. It was different, but after a while, some of the things that were different slid to the back. And I defy you to find me a guy that came to play in Toronto, some of them even kicking and screaming, that hasn't left and went, wow, Toronto.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Joe. It's a world class city with amazingly passionate fans. Like I covered this team when it was horseshit. And they still did 19,000 people a night. And they still sold T-shirts. And they still were on TV. And it's like the fan base here has never been in doubt. I did sit on the stage, maybe the last time we were here, and say I didn't think I would see a championship in Toronto in my lifetime. But I'm glad I did, and I don't care if I ever see another one because I got to see this one. And you guys know, everybody knows, it's hard. It's hard to win.
And you got to be lucky. Like, I'm listening to NBA radio now, and everybody like, oh, Toronto can run it back. It's like, hey. If Kawhi, what happens if Game 7 against Philly goes into overtime after letting the lead go? And Kawhi,
what if there's one more bounce?
Then we got a bounce T-shirt.
Oh,
there
okay.
you go. And more money to be made.
And I saw a great sign at the party, too, because you know people will break at the party, the parade, that a guy was holding up a sign that said, kiss my asterisk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when Isaiah Thomas won his first one, Magic and Byron Scott were hurt, right? When Golden State won their first one, look at every series that they went through, a key player was hurt. It's also a battle of attrition. It's skill and it's will, and that's part of it. So, I mean, I look at Kawhi. Everybody's talking about the load management. Well, it's working for you pretty good now, right? The guy played 84 games right through to the end of the year.
Yeah,
not bad.
No one has said I had tickets for January on the 9th against Sacramento and Kawhi didn't play. I'm pissed off.
Not anymore.
I don't hear that anymore. And I guarantee you we're not going to hear it next year when some guy goes, I spent my entire weekend to come down and watch them play against the Golden State Warriors and Kawhi's taking the night off. Well, guess what? Who gives a rat's ass? Because you're going to get April, May, maybe June.
And to the asterisk talk, the team is 10, 11 deep, and they benefit from that throughout the course of the season. Yeah. The Warriors decided to go top heavy. That was their decision. I would do that too, but you pay for it. You pay for going top heavy.
When the Warriors are winning, guys like Patrick McCaw were starting games for them. Like, that's the kind of depth you got to have. You got to have that. Those San Antonio teams had guys playing out of nowhere. It wasn't just Timmy, Tony, and Manu. There were other guys.
The Owls of the world.
Yeah, who were, older
Marco
guys.
Marco Bellinelli's of the world, yep.
Alberto. Fabrizio Alberto.
Fill their role, do their job, and be part of the collective. There was an interesting story. Jeremy Lin went on a podcast the day after the finals. He goes, you know what? I'm not really sure if I deserve this. And I was questioning myself. And then one of his friends said, fuck yeah. You were on the team. You were there. You were practicing. You were running against guys every day in the gym. Danny said it after the Golden State game here, where after he missed a shot. No, when he committed the foul in Golden State in 6, mm-hmm. said the guy who calmed him down was Jay Lynn. So there are guys, those guys are important to teams. So I think when you look at the Raptors roster, you can't denigrate the last 5 guys because they're equally important in their own way than the first 10.
Can you also talk about, give it up, JV getting a ring, like the guys who maybe didn't make that playoff push, but they,
if those guys don't do what they do, that doesn't happen. And this is, I think Smitty and I stood on the same side with this. Remember the year everybody wanted to tank? And we kept saying,
Tank for Wiggins.
When
is Grange? Where's Grange? Grange was a big tank for Wiggins guy. I got to talk to Mike.
Grange was the one that was all over it. And my question is, tell me when it's a bad thing to win. Because those guys all look better. And you talked about this on Saturday. JV, I mean, it's about recruitment. I always make sure I get him right. Recruitment, development, retention. Get a guy, teach him, keep him once he gets good. And they did that with guys, and all of a sudden other teams went, geez, we didn't draft that guy, but he's pretty good right now. You want to trade for him? Yeah, we'll take him.
I think it would be poetic justice if the opening game for the Raptors next year was against Memphis. So that Jonas and DeLon could get their rings along with the Raptors. That would be very, very cool. Unless it's against the Clippers for Kawhi, but that's a totally different story.
Jeez, I was.
You knew.
I was thinking maybe. I was thinking maybe against Detroit, so at least Dwayne Casey could see the banner go. And I mean that.
Oh man, that's cold.
No,
that's
tough. No, I don't mean that in a negative way. Doug, you said it on Saturday. I don't mean that in a negative way. Probably. Dwayne Casey poured his heart and soul into building this. And he's got to take, he won't, but he's got to take a measure of pride. And that statement I just made was not to throw any shade at him. He poured his heart and soul into, okay, all right.
It came across that way,
it wasn't meant to be. But he poured his heart and soul into the recruitment, the development, and the retention of players. I mean, going to see guys, you know, you see them in the summer, hey, where are you headed? Oh, I'm going here to work with this guy. They would go to Lithuania to work with Jonas. I mean, that is part of it, and helping get the right guys. Like, you look at the team that they won with in Dallas. He talked about having grown men, like Deshaun Stevenson, like a grown man, an adult. And Doug, I think you talked about it on Saturday, that culture of having grown men in the locker room.
Well, you can't, Harrison, you know this from watching those great teams are guys who've been around. There are not a lot of 22-year-olds win titles. Pascal is the outlier, mm-hmm. but you look at that Raptor team. Gasol's 34, Kyle's 32, Kawhi's an old 27. He's 28. No, he's been around. He's played a lot of games.
But he's also an old 27.
But Danny just turned 33. You got guys who have been around a long time. Fred's like a 60-year-old, 25-year-old. But you need maturity. You need guys who are grown men who can handle the moments. The cauldron of the playoffs and the physical strain. They know how to handle themselves.
And if there's anybody who wants to question, you know, JV getting a ring, which we all think he should, I remember back when we taped the podcast, he said that he was a part of that council that approached Kyle Lowry and told him that, hey, you got to start taking practice seriously in the beginning of the year, because Kyle was still sulking about the DeMar DeRozan deal. So for him to take that leadership role and try and be a part of the team, even though what is he going to tell Kyle Lowry? Kyle Lowry is, you know, captain of the team, but for him to be a part of that council, bring along Kawhi with him, and try to embrace him and make Kyle a better pro and get over that moment, you know, those are type of things that carry a long way. And imagine all year if Kyle sulked through the entire year. There's no way the Raptors are title contenders, let alone championship team. So they have to get credit for that. And to your point, imagine how Mark Jackson feels watching the Warriors win the titles.
It's true, though. And, like, I'm not laughing about that. Like, Mark Jackson, here's where we're going to get. And, okay, we're building it. Here we go. Yeah, we're here. And somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, can you sit down? We'll take over from here.
We'll call for the bullpen.
Wait a minute. That's my plan. That's my building going up. Yeah, we got it. We're good. We're mm-hmm. good. And nobody remembers.
I think organizations remember, and I think true close followers of teams remember. Like, you know, we've seen the Raptors grow from the DeMar's first year. They won 22 games or whatever, 23 games.
22 and 16.
They were horrible, but it was a steady progression. And you know what? I think that's kind of what made the last 10 weeks more fun, was that everybody sweated the first 6 years to get there.
Yeah.
Everybody went through the grind, the Washington getting swept.
Not
the
me.
LeBron. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we were there.
I came in for the gravy train.
He's the guy that tapped me on the shoulder and said, I'll finish the building from here. I got it from here.
So leave me hanging.
But the journey is almost as much fun as getting to the final destination, because it would not have been nearly as good if it was a one-time super team thrown together, let's make it happen. This was a progression for half a decade. It was a hell of a lot of fun. I think you all agree. There were nights when it was awful, and LeBron was a pain in the ass, and we're never going to win, and they suck, and blah, 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 blah. But you got to go through that to really appreciate when you get there. And when you got there, I think that's part of the reason it was so exuberant on that Friday, on that Monday afternoon.
You know, and the other thing, too, Doug, I mean, we've covered the finals a lot, like with other teams. And to see the home crowd at a finals, no matter where you are, no matter what venue, you could be in Cleveland, in Oracle, in San Antonio, in Miami, in Oklahoma City, where to see a home crowd just mesmerized by, I don't know if pageantry is the right word, but just the intensity and all that comes with the finals. And to look at people in Toronto say, wow, this is crazy. And you say, no, it's not. It's always like this. It's just that the barbecue's in your backyard this year.
Hell, they got their seats early now.
Yeah. Yeah. And to see that, and I've got people who, friends of mine who, yeah, well, you know, I don't really watch basketball. And like they're texting me at halftime, like, oh, man, my blood pressure, I can't take this. Like, hey, man, this is what it is. Like, this is what it is.
I think we've talked about, obviously, like Casey building it up and stuff. And I think DeMar deserves not maybe as much credit because he wasn't part of the build. Like, he wasn't part of the actual coaching of building and creating a team. But he deserves such a huge part of that. He obviously does not get a ring. But he's had a big impact on the way the Raptors have built themselves over the years.
There is nobody in Toronto who appreciates more for what DeMar DeRozan did for the Raptors than I do. Because I watched them. I watched them grow up from being a 19-year-old monosyllabic kid into a grown man, parent of two children, a family guy who became such a good basketball player that he could be traded for Kawhi Leonard.
And I will say this as somebody who didn't watch DeMar DeRozan, the whooping that the Spurs put on the Raptors.
Wow.
Was a bonding moment for the Raptors because they saw how much it meant to Danny and to Kawhi to not win that game and to lose in the fashion that they did. You ask anybody on the team, they'll tell you that that was a bonding moment for them losing in San Antonio the way they did.
They went to Milwaukee the next game and tore
great.
It up.
There
you
go.
And
absolutely.
Doug, to your point about DeMar, I remember when he was drafted and everybody says that about their first round pick. Oh, his kid's got great potential. We're going to make him an all-star. And, you know, I got a friend whose favorite emoji is that eye roll, you know, like, oh, like that. And you say that, right? Like Colangelo and Mark Evers, they're like, oh, we drafted this kid. He's going to be an all-star. And you go, yeah, right. Okay, whatever. And he did. Guy became a four-time all-star. And he just kept working. He realized at every step along the way, I don't have that tool. I'm going to bring that next year. Now I got that one. You know what? I need one of those, too. I'm going to get that next summer. And you got to the point where, save for a consistent three-point shot, he pretty much had every tool in the book.
Yeah, but didn't Babcock and McCloskey tell us Rafael Arruja was going to be all?
That's what I'm saying. That's eye roll emoji.
Probably. You know Michael Bradley, though.
Yeah, but every time, where's Hoffa? Every time you see Iggy, right? You think, where's Hoffa?
Is that something that you guys have seen maybe rub off onto Siakam? Because on one of the earlier panels, we talked about him as the most improved player, how he sees one thing, he goes after it, and now he's working on his three-point shot, and we've seen that start to come along this season. Is that something that you think has rubbed off from DeMar's work ethic onto someone so young and so talented?
No, I think it's in him. I think it's just part of his DNA. He is always striving to be a better basketball player and a better person. I think the memory of his father drives him. I don't think at any level will he settle now as being just a very good player and a borderline all-star. I think he's got a lot of room to grow, and I think he will because I think that's in him as opposed to seeing it in other guys.
When it comes to Siakam, do you envision him playing more minutes at the five eventually?
Yeah, I do. I think that's the way the game's going, and I think that's the way his skill set's going as well. He's got some post moves for a skinny little guy, mm-hmm. and he's going to grow up. He's going to grow into his body a little bit, and I think the way the game evolves and the way the roster evolves, because after next year, they don't have Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka. And then if you got to go, can you go with Pascal Siakam and maybe OG Anunoby? Yeah, you're 5'4". I think you probably could in this man's NBA.
And this man's NBA is a game that we used to laugh at, the European game, right, in that sense. I mean, if you look back at the 2008 Olympics, which, by the way, I thought Marc Gasol was just a total thug against Dwight Howard. All he wanted to do was beat him up. But well, when...
He's not alone in that.
No, I know. When the USA got in trouble against the zone, they put LeBron at the four, and they put him right at the nail, right in the middle of the free throw line, and other teams played zone. They gave the ball to LeBron there, and he massacred them. And it's like, okay, you got a guy who's like 6'9", can run, jump, handle the ball. He's got every tool in the belt. Yeah, that's our four men. That's our five men. And people used to laugh at the international game where, you know, you'd see guys like Vlade Divac taking, like, oh, get inside, man. What are you doing hanging around the perimeter? To your point, Doug, and we've talked about this. It's the way the game's going now.
Yeah, no, of course we're talking about Siakam and OG, but when Masai gets Giannis to come as a free agent in a couple of years, all bets are off, right? Oh, what the hell?
Not looking.
You can't be fine.
Not looking too far ahead, but you're right. The combination of Siakam, potentially Kawhi, and OG. You're talking about switchable long.
It's crazy.
That is scary.
Crazy good.
Yep.
And we never saw that this year, really.
That's probably the most disappointing thing about the champion. Well,
yeah.
There are two disappointing things I have about the championship run. One, not being able to see OG, and then. And then two, unfortunately, it feels like everybody celebrates and you talk about the championship win and you can't take more than 10 minutes to say, is he coming back?
Exactly.
And that's the unfortunate thing. You just wish you won the title and didn't have to think about such a mammoth decision coming on the heels of it.
I can't even imagine how many times over the course of six games in the media sessions and hanging around with the other writers and broadcasters afterwards. What's he going to do? What's he going to do? And my answer always was, I don't fucking care. That's a July story.
Yeah.
It's not a June story. And you're right, Harrison. The people get, we live in the future so much, we can't savor the moment that much. And I think people, they need to just chill. It'll happen or it won't happen, and we'll find out next Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday.
And I thought, Doug, for the most part, in Toronto, I mean, you got that question everywhere on the road, but in Toronto, it was asked early, and it was like, no, hey, man, I'm a Raptor. We're trying to win. Let's worry about it later. And everybody kind of went, at least publicly, they kind of went, okay, let's worry about it later.
Well, I can't write that story once a week. I put a bullet in my head. There's no answer. There's no story there. It's to feed this weird.
You got to watch them buying boxes at Home Depot or going to Niagara Falls or like, oh, this and does this mean you, this? Does this mean this?
I'm a born and raised Niagara Falls guy. Those were all American tourists chasing them around. Because my boys wouldn't do that. Because they think he was a hockey player. What the hell is that?
All right, does the crowd have questions?
Talk about Kyle Lowry.
Please talk about Kyle Lowry.
Do you know how much we hate talk about questions? Yeah. But that's entirely another thing. Kyle Lowry, he's the hardest playing, toughest Raptor ever. He's a contrarian. He can be a pain in the ass. But you never doubt his effort or his desire to win. And this team obviously doesn't get anywhere near where it was without him. But I don't know if he's... I don't think he's underappreciated by the general public, but he might be, and that's a shame because this guy just fucking plays.
Hey,
he doesn't care.
You ever play pickup ball out in the road, man? Out in the blacktop? That's how I look at it. If we're playing out on the schoolyard to seven, I'm picking Kyle Lowry. As Doug said, he's fighting for every loose ball. He's going after every big guy. He's arguing for every call. He is. And like, he's, if you're teaching school, he's the kid that sits at the back of the room and tips his chair. Like, he is. Like, and I mean that. And that's the guy that's the kid that makes you a teacher. Not the kid that sits in the front row and goes, yes, Mr. Smith, yes, Smith. Can you get to the guy at the back? And obviously, through his time here, Dwayne, Nick, and, you know, a host of others, and Masai in whatever way, they got to him, and they harness that stuff that we value. Like, I love that. There was one point in game two, the ball was heaved the length of the floor for a potential catch and shoot at the end. And somebody in Golden State hit the ball, like punched it with a fist. And I'm sitting there on the radio, I go, you can't do that. I know at least in college ball and high school ball, that's a violation to punch the ball. And I'm like, maybe the NBA doesn't have that rule. And who threw the ball from the other end, who comes running up the floor, Kyle going, like, he punched the ball. We should have 0.5 of a second. I'm like, he's right. And they didn't review it, but that's the kind of guy he is. And that's why, if we're playing on the schoolyard, He might be the first guy I pick. And I don't care that he's 6 feet. I'm picking him.
Harrison, you're closer to guys who have been around him a lot more than we have, but I certainly wouldn't want to coach him.
Yes, he has proven to be difficult at times.
I would think,
but he will admit that. I think you guys make great points. And then, if you consider what he did in the finals with the passing of his grandmother happening, the way he performed in that game six, he carried the team offensive for a long time there. You got to give him tremendous props. And his role this year wasn't to be the secondary scorer; it was to be the primary leader. And that's kind of how he functioned. Obviously, Kawhi's a leader in his own way, but Kyle did a great job this year, and I'm excited to see what he'll do next now because he's also in a contract year next year, too.
I thought there were two moments, and we talk about this all the time, when you're journeying and you're taking the route, and all of a sudden you see the finish line. Like, I've been all this way. That's it right there? And I thought that happened in game five when the Raptors were scuffling the whole night. And all of a sudden, it was like somebody said, hey, Kawhi, there's the finish line right there. Like 9 games 2 years ago, load management, bad knee, traded to Toronto. You want a championship? Bro, there it is right there. And he was making, like, that 12-2 run was 10 straight by him. And I thought I saw it at the start of game six, too. It's like, yo, Kyle, drafted in Memphis, traded to Houston, all the crap you went through. Yo, bro. There's right there, man.
Yep.
There it is, right there. You want it? Go get it. And what did he start that game with? Like 16, 15 straight points or something like that? Something ridiculous?
I was working on it.
And there's the finish line right there.
Let me pose this question to you guys before I go out into the crowd. So a quick answer. When all is said and done, will a number two be up in the rafters? Is that? No, number two. Forget number two. Kyle Lowry, what number is he?
Number seven. Wait, number seven?
Number two's a good question, though, too.
Two's for another panel. Yeah. But yeah. Number seven, will it be in the rafters?
I'm a real hard ass on retiring numbers because I think that's I think it's a bit done a bit too easily, but yes. I would be in favor of putting seven up there.
I'm with you,
and,
Doug.
And 10 and 15 and probably two, depending on what happens in the next couple of years.
I'm with you. I think, you honor numbers. I don't know if you retire them. Say nobody else can wear that. But I think you honor them. And when I look at, what Kyle's done, if that number's not retired and they decide to honor numbers, it's got to be one of the first ones.
I think you got to have a lot of balls to join the Raptors and ask for number seven.
Especially after where it came from.
The rest of the way. You cannot, if you're a draft pick in 2023 and you say, what they ask you, what number, and you say, I want seven, you got a lot of balls.
You better be a relative.
Yeah, exactly. So you better be like.
People used to think that about any team wearing number 23, though. It was like, you better have balls to just wear 23 on any team. And now we see it all the time.
Except in Miami, where they retired it.
Makes no sense.
Retire seven.
Which makes no sense.
Michael Jordan, Dan Marino, and a bunch of Heat.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Makes no sense at all. But Riles makes no sense either.
All right. I'm going into the audience now.
Oh, no. Don't. Oh, no. Not among the people.
Are you crowd surfing? Are we going to,
Should I?
Dick Vitale?
Did you guys see that in what?
Jalen Rose did it for the finals, right? In Jurassic Park, Jalen Rose. He's got nerve. He's like,
I don't know if people can support
him,
me, to be honest. But, okay. What's your question?
So, the NBA and NBA players have always been at the forefront of social issues. Where's the support for Masai after he's been carded? Because no one's talked about it for NBA players. No one's talked about it from the NBA. Where's the open support on a controversial issue like that?
Because, I'll walk you through what I know about this. It's 10 days old, and there's a lot of investigations happening. And, you throw the word carded out there. And I understand a little bit where you're coming from. But unless you're in the cauldron of that arena, you can't say that. Because there were a lot of other black guys with suits on running around, too. And I understand the concept and the idea of what happened. But there are a lot of people with a lot more involvement than you or I who are investigating this to find out what happened. And there will be justice done, and Masai will come out clean, I'm sure. But you're throwing around dangerous stuff without... knowing exactly what happened.
I'll say this, because I was on the floor. Like, our radio broadcast was such that they said, if you're not down there when it ends, you ain't getting down there to get interviews. So I had a wireless microphone and a headset on, kind of, and I thought it was kind of cool. It's kind of like the NHL guys where they stick them between the boards, the analysts. I'm like, man, I could get into this, like doing the game from courtside with the wireless. But I went down, the game ended, and I went to the floor, and right away, some guy like gave me the, you know, gave me the Gary Payton kung fu, like kung fu defense. And I went, and I showed him, I had a yellow armband on that allowed me to get onto the floor and inside the trapezoid, inside the ropes where, and I started with the interview with Serge. And I to Doug's point, I will say, I can see where that happens, especially at the finals, the game where the trophy's being presented, it's over, people rush the floor. But I will say that as a guy who's been stopped many times in this city, which has its own bits of racism, not as overt as other places, stopped for DWB, driving while black in a nice car, you need to know your clientele. Like, I can't believe that was the first time that security guard saw Masai Ujiri. Like, you don't know who that is?
And I think that's what's going to come out in the long run. I do think that's going to be the end result of this. The changing of the story is going to be exposed, and the cop will suffer the consequences for his actions.
A well-dressed black man running to the floor. Yeah, he wasn't wearing his credential. Like, you know, he had it in his hand or what? Like, you've got to kind of hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, there you go. Like that. That's it. Diffuse rather than escalate. And I just think you have to know your clientele too. Like, when Bob Myers walks into the gym at Scotiabank, it's like, yeah, it's Bob Myers. It's like, you got to know people. To me, you got to know people.
It's your job. It's your job. As simple as that, to know people.
And your boss has got to prepare you to do your job when it's going to end. This is going to all come out, and it's going to all eventually go away, and the cop will be disciplined, and Masai will be cleared of any kind of... Tell you, it was 5 days later when the cop was apparently concussed. If you hit a cop hard enough to concuss him 5 days later, more shit's going to happen on a court than you getting in the city.
Yeah.
So it's all there's a lot of, there is a lot of much ado about nothing on this story, I thought from the start.
Okay, sorry guys, I was chatting.
You were at the back of the class.
My bad,
your chair, girl.
Does anyone on this side have a question? I've got time for about two more. Is it legit?
Yeah.
All right.
Are we going to finally get a Christmas Day game?
That is a perfect question. Thank you.
Yeah, they're going to get a Christmas Day game. It'll be a pain in my ass, but
why not? You get a Christmas Day?
Wait, I missed that. What is that?
It's going to be a pain in my ass, but
I know. And to Doug's point, we always played on the 26th.
So you got to fly on Christmas Day.
Which means you get up, your little kids open the presents, like, okay, daddy's gone. And like, you're like flying with the team. It's out the door at 12. And, you know, my brother's doing the game, Brooklyn and Chicago. He's like, hey, man, did you see the game? I'm like, dude, I was in the car driving to the airport, right? Like, five games on Christmas Day. I might get to where I'm going to see the last one. And do you think... Raptors will get a Christmas Day game. Do you think they're going to bring an American team across the border to Canada?
Oh, hell yeah. They can't make the champions go on the road on Christmas Day. They can't do it.
Okay.
They won't do it.
Well, here's the other... I hate to be...
All right, so I'm okay with it then. Doug, we get to have partial dinner at home and come to the arena fat and drunk.
Pressed room turkey on Christmas Day. Whoopee!
I hate to be the guy.
With the cranberry.
Hate to be the guy.
Harrison.
But is it a Christmas Day game for the Raptors without Kawhi too?
Yeah, I think because of the championship it will be. It might be the Clippers. Oh. or wherever. That would be juicy.
That would be juicy. Yeah,
that would be
right.
Pretty damn cool. Yeah. But yeah, I think regardless of whether he's here or not, the Raptors will play at home on Christmas Day.
As long as we don't get the noon one, like I don't want to get up that early.
And I tell you something, it's been my history, the game will suck. And the people will be tired of it because they'll be all tryptophaned out with the turkey crap. That's it.
Well, they'll have cool jerseys or something, I'm sure. Maybe Casey Bannerman can design them. Okay, we have a question up front. Another panelist.
Harrison. Huge fan of yours.
Hold on.
Harrison.
In the crosshairs with Harrison.
Harrison, first time, long time. You're basically a Toronto man's at this point.
The situation room with Harrison. The situation room.
I want to know what your five favorite spots in Toronto are that you've discovered this season.
Five favorite spots,
food spots, to party, anything. Neighborhoods and things like that.
Don't lie, Harrison. Don't lie.
Number one is inside the green room.
One of my favorite places is the podcast studio. That's number one.
That's a weak answer, though. You know
that. Oh, you're getting it, though. Patois is one of my favorite places to eat. Pie is one of my favorite places to eat. There's an event that happens every Monday night at Regulars Bar that I like to go to. It's a live music event. And the fifth one.
The Rivoli. Say the Rivoli, baby.
I got six. Rivoli and Scotiabank Arena. I didn't name any clubs. See me outside, I'll let you know what my real thoughts are.
Off the record with that.
Tell us about Ripple. Well, you can remember.
Poor Harrison.
There was a birthday celebration for Danny Green at Rebel last Saturday. There were expensive bottles of liquor that were not consumed. They were sprayed into the crowd. I'll leave. Nobody else was here. Nobody else. The only people I think are in town is Kawhi and...
Freddie was here, right?
Freddie was there.
He was home babysitting.
Huh?
He was home babysitting, right?
Yeah.
It's not called babysitting when it's your kid.
Parenting.
Yeah, sorry, I'm old. That shit.
No more details regarding.
When we had kids, it was babysitting. Now it's parenting, right?
All right. In the front, in what jersey? Spicy P.
Do we expect the trend of load management to continue? And second part to that would be, how would they implement a shortening of the season to potentially 50-something games, 70-something games? How do you think they would be able to implement that?
I think the plan is, and this is still very much in its infancy, is to find some way to take 10 regular season games and condense them into maybe four during some in-season tournament. That's like a cup competition that they have in European soccer. And I think that's something that Adam Silver has been a proponent of and discussed for a while. I think load management will spread throughout the NBA.
Pop started it years ago. Remember that?
It's a thing. You can't ask these athletes to do what they do. They can't, the league has done a pretty good job in reducing 4 and 5 and 3 and 4 and the back-to-backs, but load management's here to stay, pal, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I really don't.
5 years ago, the Raptors had 20 sets of back-to-backs. They had 12 this year, and Pop's been doing load management forever. Like, he went on national TV against the Miami Heat and sent Duncan, Ginobili, Parker, and I don't know, and who else? He sent four of his five stars. Like, it's not that you're not going to play. You ain't even come to the game. Go home and sleep. And it's, to Doug's point, you buy a set of tires for your car, you only got 60,000K on them. You want to use them driving up and down Queen Street on a Saturday? Or do you want to save them and use them when you need them? And to me, I agree with Doug. That genie's out of the bottle. It ain't going back in.
For me, I do hope there is a solution, because the one disappointing thing is to see the difference in playoff basketball versus the regular season. Yes. It's so drastic of a different game. I would love to see more intense competition on a regular basis. And at the same time, too, I'd love to see basketball played at its highest level, and that means guys are healthy. So that's what I would... Whatever they got to do to make that happen, I'm all for it.
You know what they got to do is, and we've talked about this, a lot of guys have talked about this, I buy my season tickets, okay? It's not in my deal where I get free tickets. My kids want to go to the game.
I know a guy. Let me talk to him.
Yeah, okay, good. We'll talk. My kids wanted to go to the game, and there's three kids and two tickets. So it's like, hey, you guys work it out. And they have a chart at home like, oh, no, he lost here. So you can't go to the game because you're like 2-3 or whatever. Like, they do. My two of my kids will work for the NBA at Summer League this year. And they like they take it seriously. And I pay for my tickets. And when the Atlanta Hawks come to town on a Tuesday night in January, those tickets are $78 a ticket. When LeBron comes on a Wednesday night in March, those tickets go up to $260 a ticket. And if LeBron's not playing, then it's an issue, right? The tiered pricing is the thing, that this dynamic pricing and sliding scale. If all the tickets were the same all the way through, then, okay, well, I got tickets. I only paid $80 for them, and the guy's not playing. I don't feel like I've been taken to the cleaners for a ticket, and the guy doesn't play.
Yeah, I think, you know, the load management, if you only apply it, if only you're allowed to use it as a home team, I could see being a thing where you make your one visit to a city, you want to bring your best players, and you're not allowed to sit them that night. But we've seen the benefits of it. The benefits are so great that it's not going to go away. Teams are not going to let it go away because it benefits them to do it. Keep your best players fresh for April, May, and June.
All right, we have a question. Front row.
During the Milwaukee series, everybody could see that Kawhi was limping. Can you guys give us some like insight as to like what injury he may have had? And appreciate that he got over it because with Golden State it wasn't the same. He looked to be in better shape, but it looked like he was in pretty bad shape. So was there anything that you guys maybe not officially but unofficially like what was happening with him?
Well, anything we say right now would be official because it'd be out there.
Yeah. He actually, in the one Milwaukee game, I think it might have been three, he tweaked both legs at different times. One on a dunk in front of the Milwaukee bench and one on a dunk in front of the Toronto bench. And it was each leg. And he just tweaked them. You hyperextend a knee or you tweak a hamstring or you pull a muscle a little bit. And then you go see Dr. Alex and you get sort of magically healed and to play two nights later.
Yeah. I mean, I subscribe to the words of Charles Oakley in the playoffs. If you're hurt, sit down. If you're out there, I don't want to hear about it. And Kawhi's that old-fashioned, old-school kind of guy. We could look at him and say, man, that's something ain't right there, but no excuses. I mean, again, that speaks to the character. Like, I watched him walk off the floor after the win in Oakland in game four to go up 3-1. He was the last interview and people were on the floor and some people were, you know, jumping around and Raptor fans were going crazy in one corner. This guy took off the headset, put it down, and in Oakland you have to walk to the far end to go to the dressing room. He walked probably 2/3 of the court in a slow, lanking gait. Facial expression didn't change, and I said, look at that. You can't tell if that dude won $100 million Powerball or he just murdered 15 people back there and walked away. And like, people ask him that, right? People ask him, like, wow, so what's it like to beat Milwaukee four times? Like, I don't know, we ain't done it yet, right? And he gave the best one after Milwaukee game. He gave the Warren Sapp, right?
After game two.
Where do we go from here? Back to Toronto for game three. Like, you know, and to Harrison's point about the intensity of the playoffs, it's one game. Like, it doesn't matter if you win by 50, lose by 50, win by one, lose by one. It's one game. There's no such thing as, like, momentum carrying over. Like, look at closeout games and how hard they are. Like, when Fred hit that bucket in game six, that three to give them the lead, like, it was like a goal in hockey. It's so freaking hard to score at the end. It's not even basketball. There's grabbing and clutching and pushing, and the ref's like, they don't know what to call. It's you know, to your point, to your question, Kawhi just, he didn't care. It didn't matter. And for us to say, what's wrong with your leg? He'll go, I heard it. I'm okay.
One of the guys did say that there's something wrong with his knee. But yeah. I'm not saying that. That's what one of the guys said it publicly already. So just
yeah, I mean,
but nobody knows.
It did look
there's no official
It did look like a lot like he hyperextended it at one point in that Milwaukee. But you know what? They have world class medical people and trainers who get you healthy enough in a quick enough time that you don't really care. You go hang with Alex McKechnie for a couple hours and you get better.
Harrison's like one of the guys that I mean, I'm
you just
sorry.
Go to the post game quotes. Sorry. It's all there.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if you guys can see me right here. We got a question right in the middle.
Hey guys. So I think this one would be a little bit more for Doug and Paul. Maybe Harrison, but
No, you ain't getting out that easy, so, man. Sit your black ass down.
Okay. So I'm a really big believer in stories, and I think stories are important, and they make us who we are. And I think this championship run has brought out among the fan base a lot of stories, like my own story of being an immigrant and being a fan of the Raptors. And I know I'm not unique in that. And all of my friends would post on Facebook, this is what happened to me when the 22-win season was going on, you know? And you two have been, in some senses, story keepers for the Raptors fan base for so long.
I've been trying to get him to write a book for years. He looks at me like, no. He knows where bodies are buried. I know where bodies are buried. He's got shovels.
So what I'm asking is there a particular memorable story to you that stands out from all of these years that might be sad, that might be, you know, important, that are just nostalgic to you, whether it's your own story or someone else's story, a friend's story, just any particular bit of story that's been important because of this championship?
Harrison, you got a story. You got to have one.
Story. They have stories that are probably deeper than
stories me. From Rebel Nightclub. Yeah.
He was the guy who tapped me on the shoulder and said, I'll finish the building. He's got a story.
Yeah. The only thing that I thought about during this run, and I thought about it often, was a lot of people who never got to see it but who were there to start building.
Yeah.
There's a woman who you guys have never heard of and probably never seen named Doreen Doyle, who was for 20 years the gatekeeper to the franchise. She took care of the players' housing. She got them cars. She made sure their leases were signed. She helped them in every facet of their lives, got their family, their kids in school. And she retired, and she wasn't here to see this as an active member of the franchise. And those are the kind of people that I think I appreciate because I've been around it since day one. And in when Jonesy writes the book and I write the foreword, we'll tell, because that's, hey, that's the easy part.
I told you. No,
that's
no, no.
That's the easy part.
The bodies are buried, and I'm like, oh, I know who's there, and I look over, and there's Doug with a shovel. Like, I know.
But those are the ones you try to tell, as I mentioned earlier, during the journey, because it's all steps on the way, and these people are equally as important to where the franchise is as people who celebrated last week where it got to.
I think about, like Doug, the early years, those people that, you know, they always say that the pioneers get the hardships, the settlers get the land, right? And I think of the early years where, like Damon Stoudemire and Doug asking him, like, you know, what are you learning from losing? Losing sucks. Like, you know, I remember the first triple-double by Damon on TNT against Seattle on a Thursday night. Like those kinds of things. And I remember Glenn Grunwald standing on the court at Maple Leaf Garden, 16-66, Smitty, and saying,
booing his ass. People are booing his ass.
They were killing him. And he was like, yeah, I guarantee you this will never happen again. And like all of those things. I remember Butch Carter taking over a team with like eight guys one night, playing eight guys. Like those are the things that I remember. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm driving around now, and I'm listening to NBA radio, and they're talking about free agency, and they say, well, you know, like, the Raptors won it without a lottery pick, and I'm like, shit, Toronto's really the NBA champs? Like, seriously? Seriously? Like, getting off the plane this year at Summer League, like, you know, you try to take stuff that's, like, nondescript so you can wear, like, when you're in the casino or whatever, and, like, I got that hat that you're wearing, my brother. I got that one. I'm like, you
that's
know what?
That's the championship hat.
I might put that shit in my bag and wear it in Vegas. Like, it's crazy to think, like, to, as Doug said, to think back to the people that started it. John Bitov was there. Like, you saw him. Yeah, Doreen Doyle was at game one, by the way. Yeah. Like, those people, you know, the pioneers that took the hardships, and now, you know, the settlers are getting the land.
All right, we have time for one or two more questions. I have one here over to your right, you guys.
Hey, guys. So, assuming the board man signs with us, right, next year, can the Raptors afford to keep the whole roster and bring the whole roster back, or how do you foresee the next year roster looking?
Well, outside of Kawhi, the entire roster is under contract for next year, and Danny. And I think if Kawhi stays, Danny Green will be back. So, yeah, they're not only afford it, they're under contract. They're not going to get rid of any of them. Kyle, Gasol, Serge, Freddie, Norm, all those guys are under contract. So they're not going to add anybody. They're not going to get rid of anybody. And they can afford it because they've set up the contracts as such that they're going
to
pay him.
And to Harris's point, we still haven't seen OG yet, right?
Still haven't seen OG yet. And to, I'm not going to try and burst your bubble, but yes. Yes, and I know the board man has to come on the show, too. I realize that. As it pertains to the next year's roster, I mean, if we're being real here, you guys should understand that there's a chance that Danny doesn't come back. I know.
Yeah.
It's just a real thing. I mean, trust me, I've been pushing him to come back because I want to come back, and I want to stay.
But Danny's a sought-after commodity, a veteran, experienced three-point shooter that can guard his position.
Yep.
Like that's valuable. That is the ultimate on any team.
Shut up! You're writing my story for tomorrow.
Here's my point, and you've worked this hard to get to this level, a championship level. Why would you take it apart? Like run it back, and people are like, well, the tax, whatever. I remember the Lakers winning a championship. And somebody joked that, here's your box with the banner. And, oh, yeah, by the way, that envelope in there, that's a $30 million tax bill. I mean, it's about winning, and you're at this point. Why would you change things?
They sold $30 million for their T-shirts.
Yep.
Tax schmacks.
You have to run it back. You guys would feel robbed if the team didn't do everything they were supposed to do to bring everybody back. And the tickets cost a lot, and merchandise costs a lot. They have to do their best to run it back.
Now, I'm also going to warn you, and I don't know if Blake's here to back me up on this, but I know this to be true. If Kawhi doesn't come back, and if Danny Green doesn't come back, they got no money to get anybody.
Yep.
Not going to happen. There is no dollars in the budget under the cap to get a player. Sign and trades don't exist very much in the NBA anymore because you can't do the fifth year on them. They'll have the mid-level exception will be about $9 million, mm-hmm. maybe. But they're not going to get... If Kawhi leaves and Danny leaves, there is no $20 million guy coming through the door.
And that's unfortunately where if you're a Masai and you're Bobby Webster, you seriously have to think about as much as it would hurt. You start to see if you could trade Serge, Mark, and Kyle because they're on expiring years of their deals.
Yeah, or you do that in February to build for... But Kawhi's coming back and Danny's going to get 3 years and 40 and everything.
Right. Yeah.
And actually, the parade's going to come by my damn house so I can see it.
There you go.
And they're still going to play the Clippers on Christmas Day, just because they thought, right?
Oh, that would still be good.
They should play the Clippers on Christmas Day and have it a Huskies and Buffalo Braves throwback game.
Oh, there you go.
Put me in charge of the fucking NBA, pal. I got it worked out.
I did want to see the Raptors retro jerseys for one playoff game.
I know.
Stay around another year. We got you.
I think in every important road game, they wore the Canada ones. The North, right?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know. You know what? We need to talk to Paul Elliott, the equipment manager. Like, apparently they're picked out well in advance.
All
like,
year.
All year. Yeah, like, yeah. When the schedule comes out, they boom, boom, boom. They know everyone they're going to wear. And like... Man, the playoffs, it seemed like every important game.
Don't bring back the damn camouflage. I'd be quite fine.
I really would have loved those retro ones for one playoff game. That would have been cool.
It would have been cool. Okay, guys, we have time for one more question, depending on how long you guys talk. But we do have time for one more question. So right in the front.
I was just wondering if you've heard any news about whether Kyle's going to need surgery on his thumb or not.
I have not heard anything. We haven't seen Kyle since the parade, but I would presume he will have something cleaned up. He's in Europe right now. Hopefully playing golf with a bad hand, and I'm sure having a great time. But there was every indication at the end of the year that he would have to get that cleaned up somehow. But we haven't heard it, and he's still scheduled to go to the USAB camp in early July, but I think we'll get a news release at some point going, Kyle had successful surgery, and as long as the team doesn't say he had unsuccessful surgery.
He played so well that you really you forgot.
You forgot about it.
Yeah. Wow.
But we haven't heard, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if the end of next week we didn't get a note saying he's had surgery. He'll be fine for the start of training camp.
That's a good question.
I think we've been seeing this on Twitter.
Good question.
We've been seeing this on Twitter a whole bunch about even if Kawhi is here for 1 year, if he decides to leave next year, does he become the best Raptor of all time? Ooh, I think silence.
It's hard to say. It's... While it might seem ridiculous that the guy was only here 1 year, it's hard to deny that because he's taken you somewhere you've never been before.
I think you have to distinguish between best and important. And that's,
Twitter
that's
doesn't
a,
distinguish. That's the problem. I keep looking at these being like,
What is this Twitter thing? But yeah, you can say he's absolutely had the best season of a best postseason of a Raptor of all time. But is he the most important Raptor of all time? I still think you got to look at Tamar and Kyle in that conversation.
Harrison?
Yes. Simple.
Yes.
Finals
yes.
MVP.
Yes.
Simple as that.
Period.
Period.
All right, guys, we're ending with that. You guys agree? Do you think Kawhi is the best of all time? I don't know if they're cheering for you guys or Kawhi now, but give it up for these three lovely gentlemen. Doug, Paul, Harrison, thank you guys. And thank you, everybody, for coming out to the special edition of this Hoop Talks.